Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Welcome to this podcast while driving. I'm going to cover this one, I hope, on scales of the universe, and sort of integrate it to sort of an advanced teaching package. Now, this is a podcast while driving, so what I try and do is sort of mix my cognitive therapy. So while I'm driving, I'm podcasting, and I'm sort of hitting the podcast reading ability. You know, hopefully you'll hear me improve in my podcasting and reading ever so slowly. And this is the whole thing of this rehab stuff to get across. So just to put you in context, so I'm driving from Glenbrook from the Blue Mountains up to Michenbury. Someone's had a look at me. So I'm turning here. It's going to take me roughly 20 minutes to do that. And with almost all things, you really slog at it. And the metric that you're looking at, you know, say your typing speed, increases slowly, but it's sort of a real sinusoidal increases, decreases, increases, decreases, doesn't seem to really go anywhere. But then it sort of has payoffs. And similarly to podcasting, really going on, it just is a real long-term slog as I'm trying to get my cognitive ability higher and higher and higher. So previously I talked about introduction to quantum mechanics, and it really comes down to telling people what a quantum particle looks like, what it is, and I'm trying to get them into groups with what they've been told is incorrect, and that causes so much angst. People get angry, people walk out of the room and start criticizing who you were, talking about how great their teacher was, how reasons things are, that, you know, how obvious. It's sort of like you're told that electrons are really tiny, and so it's a rock, it's more tiny than that. A seed on my McDonald's hamburger, the sesame seeds. No, it's smaller than that. And eventually everyone talks you down and imagine it's super tiny. And we sort of tell people that tininess can go infinitely tiny. You can keep on getting tinier and tinier and tinier. So you can imagine that way, but your imagination in actual fact exceeds reality. So it's one of these amazing things that one aspect people talk about reality being formed by mathematics. Your mathematics produces these formulas, these aren't real, I can't touch them. Imagine a society built on mathematics, which is indeed our society. Our silicon chip is a mastery of mathematics. It's got a lot going on. Silicon chip. So it's changing lanes here. Sorry about that. It's all part of podcasting while driving. You'll hear the odd occasional road surface change. You'll hear indications. You'll hear me look at traffic conditions and make a comment halfway through, because this is what podcasting while driving is. So, to me, it's really fascinating that people shun mathematics and then they go for what really is a mathematical, equally mathematical, and a mathematical impossibility. And it's sort of a mathematical device. A quantum particle is a mathematical device, along with a series of mathematical devices which we've slowly and ever so slowly moved away from. And if it's not a particle, it's not a tiny little micro speck that I can zoom with a microscope, what does it look like? What does an electron look like? Or what does an atom look like? Can I ever zoom in on an atom? Well, an atom is a quantum wave function. Someone's showing me the lights and the back. Sorry. You can't actually see an atom. Now, you can see an atom with a microscope. So let's pull back and discuss some of this because this goes into it. So it's a discussion of quantum mechanics and atom. Now, there's probably three... You can see electrons. You can see individual atoms in two ways. The one way is you can see an atom by poking it with another atom and having a computer which gives the information back. Now, to say that we're using a device to see something is... I'm just freezing my face off here with this cooler. Okay, sorry, I was talking about my air conditioning at the moment. So you can get basically a needle tip, really amazingly based on pretty much your gramophone needle. You know, your record needle, those old needles on a cantilever with a little point on it. You can get a really sharp one which goes down to one atom, and you can get it such that you can get the pick-up noise, you can feel the groove, basically. You know how your gramophone needle goes through a groove and picks it up. You can actually listen to the sound of this as it's scraping across. In fact, you can do a few tricks to it. You can actually play a sound into a needle and see how it tunes a little bit. You drag it across and you can get these crystals, piezoelectric crystals, which you can get to move fractions of an atom. And you can actually pull this entire thing across and actually feel an atom. Now, let's see what we've got to my... Oops. There's some cops, as they always do, waiting around the place here. It's going 2 kilometres above the speed limit, and you're all okay, thanks for that. So that's one way. You can actually, and it's called a scanning tunneling microscope, or an atomic force microscope, AFM. You can go on the internet. So we can actually see atoms. And what do they look like? Well, they don't look like what they draw on the boards. They do look like quantum things. They look like little fluffy walls. What more can I say? Then there's another way you can see atoms. And really, that's an atom condensate. That is, you can get a Bose-Einstein condensate where the actual atoms, the quantum states slip through each other, and you can actually see, well, there's one way of saying that a Bose-Einstein condensate, something cool physical helium, the actual atom, its kinetic energy drops down and the actual states coincide with each other, and basically it's many atoms placed on top of each other. So it's like a very faint photograph of a large atom, and you can put another layer, increase the contrast until you can actually see individual atom or an atom behaving as if it's one, they're all connected, multiple atoms behaving as if it's one. You can actually see an individual atom through a microscope with a Bose-Einstein condensate. So it's saying that although we can experience individual atoms separately, we can actually merge them together, and when you cool an atom down, it expands in size. Now, how does that happen? Well, that goes back down to the Schrodinger wave equation, which I'm talking about a little bit later. Here comes something that's happening here. What you're after? The police are after someone. There's a big traffic jam up here, so let's hope there's no big accident. So let's go through it again. You get this, the force microscope, where we can actually get subatomics or in the atomic scale, we can actually move things so sufficiently fine that we can actually touch an atom and feel an atom. We can cool an atom, and when you cool an atom, the temperature, the size of the atom increases phenomenally. So this is the thing that slower things get larger in quantum mechanics. Build us a figure. We can build a wave of an atom up and up and up and cool it down. I think it's rubidium. Various ones. We can actually cool a population down, and that population condenses. And it doesn't condense, it doesn't stick together as a drop. It sticks together as the same atom. It's got the same wave function. Everything is so cold, it's got the same wave function, and we can actually see it under a microscope, and we can actually get that wave function of that one atom to actually, you can see waves, and you can actually get a matter laser out of it, just to get into it. Now, the other one is, can I see electrons? Yes, you can see electrons. What do electrons look like? Well, large scale, they look silvery because they're the silver of your metal. If you pick up your fork, your teaspoon, you look silvery in this. That is, there's no surface paint there. You're actually looking straight into the lattice, iron lattice, well, I think iron lattice of your spoon, and you are looking at. You can't see the individual ions, the cores, but you can see the electrons C there. And you're seeing these large electrons. Each electron is very large, very faint silver, but then you've got billions of silver electrons painted on top of each other. And they form a liquid that responds to light coming in by creating a ray coming out, and it's called reflection. And you can actually see, oops, here quickly. I can finish this one. Be at my destination in plenty of time. It's so lovely to go there. I'm nearly overshot. Something's happening. It normally takes buckets and buckets of time to get where I'm going. Again, from quantum mechanics, you get this thing, and you can start to see these subatomic particles. And you say, oh, well, you don't need a microscope to see an electron. Anything silvery is you're watching the actual electrons. These are free wild child electrons. Now, if something's coloured like a coloured paint or something, you're still seeing those electrons, but they're bound and stuck to pop of atoms. And so, I was interested in the red of tomatoes. They have really these long stick molecules, and the electrons are free to travel up and down them such that they respond to light by absorbing the light. And so, it absorbs all the short wavelengths. It doesn't absorb red light. That's too much. If it was absorbed all wavelengths of light, it would be black. It doesn't absorb red light. So it absorbs any short wavelengths. It goes in and pumps the electrons up and down and converts the light to blue light to heat. You know, if you want to cook a tomato, you get a blue laser and cut it. A red laser, the light will bounce off it. And this is one of these weird things. Oops, coming across. It's the absorption and scattering of it. So you can see. So a spectroscopist, someone with molecular physics, can see electrons anywhere in the colour. They can get a real sense of it. And you can see the music of an electron, the shape of an electron. You can actually see in the spectra that all comes out. But we can actually see large electrons. Now, is it the way that we teach it? Is it a piece of metal, all these little spots, which are the positive ions, and the rest is just a void with electrons just rattling through it. Is it like that? Well, the answer is no. And well, that's just not it. The electrons are large, fluffy things which pack in to the entire crystal. And they build up. So what does an electron look like? Well, an electron, it's hard to say. An electron is as big as the crystal it inhabits. So if I have a crystal of iron, the electron in there, in that one there, it depends on what I want to look like. That electron is this big. If I've got a millimeter crystal, so a millimeter by millimeter by millimeter, the electron in that crystal, this electron there sitting in the crystal, is 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter, and it's there, and there are billions of 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter electrons sitting through that, and there's no surfaces. It's soft. There's no hard beginning or end. Like in your particle, you can feel a grain in your hand. They're all soft, and they're defined by a function. That is, that if I have to draw where it is, rather than putting a dart into it, I get my pen and I draw a curve in it. The curve I draw for is an algebraic curve. So it can go positive and negative. It can have, it can have complex numbers in it. But if I just restrict myself to it being positive or negative, I have to square it to make it a rule. I just forgot to put on the indicator there to make it a real number. So it's in that area, and it's completely within that space. So a quantum particle is soft, fluffy, and big. Now, you say, well, what happens if I bounce off the electron and pull it off, and then I fire it into a screen? I can actually make it really small. An electron has to be really small, because it's an electron microscope, for God's sake. You know, I can get an electron microscope and fire electrons at this crystal. Now, the thing is that once you take an electron out of its crystal and you have its high speed, you start to know things about it. You start to know its position, and it will have a position. And really effectively, a high speed electron changes its shape. It gets more narrow in position. So if I get an electron and eject a high speed electron from it, the high speed electron will shrink, and it'll get smaller and smaller the higher energy it is. And in an electron microscope, the resolution increases as you increase the energy. But what happens is it increases the energy, the timing of it increases. So although the electron shrinks in one direction, certainty of where it is in the other direction, its momentum certainty, changes. It's sort of a very remarkable thing. So the electron actually physically changes shape. And you say, what the heck? You mean it's not at a spot, it's this fluffy thing, and then when I fire it out, it looks small, but it's small because it turns into like a little snake which can worm its way through. For a hole, so I can actually basically transform something. It's sort of like I've captured this big fluffy electron in a box and I stick a pinhole on it, get that electron out through even a really tiny hole. But when I get it out by actually changing its shape into a long thing. The actual timing position of where it goes decreases its position and time. Time doesn't get there. Time and momentum might be another way of describing uncertainty in it. But I can transform. I can, if I grab an electron, I fluffy electron and put it into an electric field, it elongates. Now, you find this is... that's mad. Well, the feeling of a long electron is exactly what happens in these free electron lasers. So I can get a single electron. And I can put it in this high-speed run, so it's going very fast. It's very, in this case, very long. It goes through a wiggler, so that its magnetic field shakes, it shudders as it goes through. And I can use that to make a single electron emit light and lays. It's something really hard to get your mind along, but it is possible. The idea that this, you can get an electron and you can make it very small by making it very powerful and fast, you can actually make it very small and long. So the actual electrons do have a shape, and it's all quantum mechanics, and it's not this is not rubbish. This is all the electrons existing. We call it bonds, we call it conduction, we call it solid state physics. We do so much with this type of stuff, and it's not that what I'm saying is incorrect. What I'm saying is much closer to the actual science. It explains how a solid cell works. It explains, just like a solid cell, you cannot explain a solid cell with classical physics. You've got to have momentum and stuff like that. Now, one of the things is that if you are taught experience, you're taught at, here's this big scale, nothing changes as you go down to the ground scale. Here's a ball, I throw it at you. If I throw a ball at you, the ball doesn't become smaller and longer in real life. So you can, if you've been assured that, if you've been taught and reinforced that every piece of science has to have a physical analog of the table in front of me, and I'm not going to do anything else, you're not going to believe this. Now, an interesting thing is that one of the things, if you want to actually have an electron cloud, and you just want to lose your high energy electrons, you just put a mesh around it, and the mesh will stop the larger electrons. So you can actually sieve electrons. You can actually get low energy electrons, and they will not fall through the mesh. But high energy electrons can, so you can have a mesh, and this will only let high energy electrons and a positive charge behind it. The high energy electrons will see the positive charge through the gaps in the mesh, so they'll see the negative, but the low energy electrons will be kept inside. So look, if I can just say some of the things explained with this new shape of electron. I wanted to get onto to scales, but trying to describe what a wave function is. So, a particle, you get your pen, you just dot on the thing, and that's a dot. For a wave function, you draw a graph, a curvy graph, and it starts off small, builds up, has a few wheels, and then builds down again. As all particles do, if I have a particle located here, it's most likely what, it's in this region. It's not, as these absolute idiots say, disappearing, reappearing. It is the wave function. It's not the wave function. It doesn't have to be interpreted. It is. It's like, how do I interpret you? Well, I am me. Look, that's the end of it. End of story. How come I have having to do all this stretching? Well, it's because it hasn't, you know, how come I have to maneuver or reinterpret things if I haven't, I've been taught this first, how come you're doing this, that? The problem is that you've just been taught incorrectly to start off with, unfortunately, and your feeling that this is new and wrong is just purely because you've been taught in a different place. So it's sort of like, oh, I don't know, you've lived in a society where you've not been allowed to vote, and now we just say, well, yes, you can vote. People have to be educated, oh, I have to vote? Whereas if you get brought up that way, you'd have to be educated not to vote. And so we really should be educating people in the old classical model, where you've got all these weird things, forces at a distance, point particles, angelic time, the whole slew of ideas harking from the Middle Ages. How does one do it? Okay, so I've reached here. I was going to actually start to give a talk about the scales of the universe, but this one's just a retour of what quantum particle is like, what an electron is like. I'll get there. And hopefully as I rehab and go over the same things again and again, I'll get into a better ability to discuss things. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.